There is a body of work that focuses on the implicit associations we make in our bodies tied to emotional responses. These associations are what we call our gut reactions. And they take precedent over and are often more powerful than our rational intellect. If we are to change the way that we perceive ourselves or others, it's helpful to come to terms with what our bodies are telling us about our beliefs and narratives. During this meditation, I will suggest ways that your body may respond to certain situations, but remember that there is no right or wrong way to feel. It is the meanings that we make about the sensation that can be the opening to understanding our own implicit responses. So I invite you now to close your eyes if you feel comfortable and come into a restful space. Does your heart feel pierced when another person who looks like you or looks like your brother is gunned down? Does your mouth go dry, your throat close up when you come face to face with the realization of your own perpetual of white cultural norms? Are you numb all over because your body has decided that it is too much for you to bear? Does your stomach churn when your family is hunted down and expelled from the places they risked to go to carve out a better life? Do your arms go numb when you feel helpless to do anything to console, to mend, to fix the injustices that you see happening all around you? Or does your whole body ache, telling you to close into yourself, to cut ties with a world that is just too much? These are the effects of white supremacy on our bodies, yours and the others in this room. There is a place where these can be healed, in a beloved community which sees, hears, and experiences these alongside you and chooses to care, to get involved, and to connect. This beloved community is the place where you can reclaim your time to process the horror and the discomfort the rest of the world would rather sweep under the rug. This is where you can belong because you are loved, not loved because you belong. In a beloved community, you'll be reminded of some truths that transcend the chaos and the oppression that the dominant culture denies, that your body is free, that your mind is free, and your love is a gift ready for the giving in every moment. You are the one we've been waiting for to take part, to build and bolster this community for all who seek refuge. Before we begin our sermon, I want to invite you to keep your pink inserts close to you. There will be lots of singing during the sermon, and I invite you to follow myself and Zach and the choir. Beth is going to start us out.
This is the song on the pink sheet, Beloved. I'll sing it once, and then you sing it with me.
Where you go, I will go, beloved. Where you go, I will go. Where you go, I will go, beloved. Where you go, I will go.
Then this part goes.
For your people are my people. Your people are mine. Your people are my people. You're divine, my divine.
Try that.
For your Where you go, I will go, beloved. Where you go, I will go once more. Where you go, I will go, beloved. Where you go, I will go for your people. For your people are my people. Your people are mine. Your people are my people. Your divine, my divine.
Beautiful. So I grew up in a small racist town in Ohio. I knew that it was racist because the language of racism lived and was spoken in my home on a daily basis. And I remember finding a white robe in my grandfather's closet as I was poking around once. I cannot be certain what that white robe was for, but knowing what I know now and looking back on my childhood and my grandfather, who was unapologetically racist, one can come to some conclusions. I was always told that our city schools, void of any brown or black kids, were the best schools around, and that our neighborhood, also void of people of color, was the best place to live. In her article on white fragility, Dr. Robin DiAngelo writes that white people are taught not to feel any loss over the absence of people of color in their lives, and in fact, the absence is what defines their schools and neighborhoods as good. Whites come to understand that good school or good neighborhood is coded language for white. This dynamic of gain rather than loss via racial segregation may be the most profound aspect of white racial socialization. Years later, when I began college in rural Kentucky, I was so shocked and amazed that there were a variety of races of people all around me, and I was scared. I was scared because I was not familiar with these people who were not white like I was. And because I did not try to dig around to understand this fear, I continued to be sucked into my own white privileged world. A world in which I did not have to consider the thoughts and feelings from those who did not have white skin like I did. About 5 years after that experience, my husband and I would move to Tacoma, Washington. We rented a house, sight unseen, directly across the street from this huge house that was just out of a Halloween movie. It was gray with a dark roof. It had some shingles falling off, and it was in disrepair. It made me uncomfortable. And then a few days after we moved there, I was out in the yard working and saw three huge Samoan men walking from their house to their car. And that was all I needed to become fearful of that house, the house that already made me a little uneasy. Occasionally, I would see them out and about, but I basically tried to avoid them. That was my white fear settling in again. The white fear, the white fragility that I learned from my family of origin, the fear that tells me to be uncomfortable with those who look different from me, no matter what I may or may not know about them. 6 months or so after we moved in, I came home and parked my car in the driveway. Those big men were out in the yard again, and as I was getting out of my car, the three men came walking towards me, and I froze. Then one of them, who I would later learn was the eldest son named Amosa, said to me, "Someone came and parked in your driveway. And because we didn't recognize the car or the person, we stayed out in our yard until they left 20 minutes later. And we wanted you to know that somebody had been here." Those men did not know my husband or I from Adam or Eve. These men who I had convinced myself that I should fear had just come over to tell me that they stood as protectors of my home. Let that sink in a little bit. Would you find yourself doing the same thing for strangers? I don't know if I would. From then on, we became friends. We saw each other daily, shared words of greeting and stories with one another. Where you go, I will go, beloved. Where you go, I will go. Where you go, I will go, beloved. Where you go, I will go. For your people are my people. Your people are mine. Your people are my people. You're divine, my divine. This was really the first relationship I had with people who were not white. Many things factored into that life, always living in white neighborhoods, always going to white schools. My privilege, though I would not name it at the time, allowed me to always be with people who looked like I looked. Fast forward 5 years to 2014 when I began seminary. The very first class I took at Meadville Lombard was a class called Multicultural Congregations as Faith Formation. It was slated to meet in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I signed up for the class because I wanted to become aware of multicultural congregations in hopes of attracting people of color to my predominantly white church. I did reading after reading for this class in preparation for the intensives. I learned all about the Tulsa race massacre and how the Tulsa UU Church was doing deliberate and successful multicultural work. But I never looked inward until I got to Tulsa. You see, this class had nothing to do with attracting people of color to our predominantly white churches. It had everything to do with teaching young white ministers what it is like to be a person of color in this world, and teaching young ministers of color how to survive in this predominantly white UU association. The course demanded constantly that we would do self-reflection about ourselves, our race, and the way we live in this world. And this was hard. If you remember about our body responding to certain things, my body responded with nausea and tears, lots of tears. I cried at least every hour the entire week long. In her article, "The Roots of White Supremacy Are in Our Bodies," psychotherapist Madeline Rust advises us to be in touch with our bodies. She says that you must tolerate a host of body sensations and the discomfort that may come with them. This phenomenon of white fragility attests to just how challenging this can be for some white people. It is uncomfortable to be called out, or even to be called in for a behavior or remark that was unintentionally hurtful. It is uncomfortable to have one's viewpoint decentralized when it has previously been the norm. It is uncomfortable to tolerate the grief that arises when one truly opens one's heart to the reality of pain and suffering in oneself or in one another. My white fragility was seeping out of my body in the form of tears and stomach pain because I had never before considered the impact of my words and actions as a white people on people of color in my lifetime. And the reason it hurts so much, the reason my body was in pain, was because I finally realized the deep impact of pain and hurt that I had caused so many people of color in my lifetime, even as a child. The hymn, "I Need You to Survive," is, among other things, the unofficial UU Person of Color anthem for many UUs of color who have gone to national UU events in the last few years. Events in which we, as white UUs, have not been present or truly affirming of Black lives, no matter how many times we say it or how many banners we hang. Before singing this hymn at the 2016 General Assembly, Dr. Glenn Thomas Rideout introduces the hymn with these words. David Frazier wrote a song called "I Need You to Survive." And as we endeavor to be a community showing up together, affirming the dignity of Black lives, we must endeavor to be present with Black faiths. Then in solidarity, we might enter into a blessed relationship that allows us to deserve to be called allies. I need you, you need me. We're all a part of one body. Stand with me, agree with me. We're all a part of one body. I just want to go back. I sang that the UU way, when in actuality, the words that were written by David Frazier have the word God's body in them. I meant to sing it that way, but I am so preconditioned as a UU to sing the words that are more comfortable with myself. So I just want to acknowledge that oops, so that you might see that in your own lives as well. So I cannot stand here and explain to you how Black lives live in a different world than those with white lives and why they need to sing this hymn to each other, so I will let the voices of our Black UUs speak for themselves. Freelance writer Shane Paul Neal says, "I'm on my way to a job where I am the only Black person in my office. I work with people who either don't know or don't care about Alton Sterling or Philando Castile. They're all going to ask me, 'How are you this morning?' And the simple truth is that I can't be honest. I can't say that I'm scared and angry and that I want to take a mental health day. I can't say that, and people like me subconsciously fear for our lives on a daily basis. I can't say how I am this morning because it will make them uncomfortable and offended. The offensiveness of my pain," he says, "is why we have to remind America over and over again that Black lives do matter. Because if you lack empathy for our tears, it's likely that you lack respect for our lives. It is our will that every need be supplied. You are important to me. I need you to survive." On the struggle for racial justice and Black Lives Matter, soon to be Reverend Aisha Ansano writes, "It's not the specific methods of Black Lives Matter protests that are making people uncomfortable. It's the fact that the struggle for racial injustice is seeping into their white lives, awarenesses in ways they can't ignore. White people are visitors to the struggle for racial justice, ones that aren't forced to be there, but can choose to come and leave whenever they like. People of color reside in the struggle for racial justice by virtue of their skin color. As people who are constantly in the struggle, people of color have the right to make claims on what they find is okay and not okay, what they see as helpful and not helpful. I won't harm you with words from my mouth. I love you. I need you to survive." Our call to worship this morning, words from the Reverend Dr. Mark Morrison Reed, remind us that there is a connectedness, a relationship discovered amid the particulars of our own lives and the lives of others. Once felt, he says, it inspires us to act for justice. It is the church that assures us that we are not struggling for this justice on our own. Together, our vision widens and our strength is renewed. Grab your pink inserts again and join Zach and I. You will follow me. Zach will lead us. Oh, go ahead.
Courage,
my
friend, you do not go alone. Go with you and sing your spirit home.
So I told you these stories from my life today because I think that when we talk about racism, that all of the white folks in this room right now can identify as somewhere along my path. Perhaps you are at the stage where you have not acknowledged the color of your skin as something to be considered. Perhaps you have had the realization that you are white, but you're not really sure why race should matter. Maybe you have acknowledged that you have white skin and that it has a certain kind of privilege in this world that others do not, but you're not sure what to do next. And maybe, just maybe, you, as white individuals, are working every day to raise an awareness of the impact that our white words and deeds have on people of color. While I speak of my journey to racial awareness as a struggle, our siblings of color are the ones truly struggling to live in this world, and we, as white folks, must open our ears and our eyes. I shared the words from people of color to help you hear what the real, actual struggle is in our country, the struggle that is happening all around you. Wherever you are on this journey, whatever your skin color, I will go with you. This community will go with you. So let us lean into the discomfort of this broken world, hold the hand of our neighbor, and build a new way into the future. You are important to me. I need you to survive. Blessed be, and amen.